Jamunati Ravana Chadi. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Madhava Kunjabi. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Kunjabi Hari Gopi Jana Balabha Giri Pada Dhaji Gopi Jana Balabha Giri Pada Dhaji Jasoda Nandana Prajajana Dandana Jasoda Nandana Prajajana Dandana Jamuna Tira Vana Chadi Jamuna Tira Vana Chadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Madhava Kunjabi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Harimajagacharya Astatarasata Si Srimadis Divine Grace Si Bhakti Vedanta Swami Si De Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavade Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Gaur Pilanandi Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Text 14, actually 13 and 14, Canto 10, Chapter 19. Krishnasya Yoga Viryam Tada Yoga Maya Nubhavitam Davagnir Atmanakshemam Vikshate menire maram Krishnasya yoga viryam tad Yoga maya nubhavitam Davagnir atmanakshemam Vikshate menire maram Ladies, please. Krishna's yoga viryam tad yoga maya nabhavitam. Yoga Maya Nabhavitam. Krishnasya, of Lord Krishna. Yoga Viryam, the mystic power. Tat, that. Yogamaya, by his internal power of illusion. Anubhavitam, effected. Dava agnihe, from the forest fire. Atmanaha, of themselves. Kshemam, the deliverance. Viksha, seeing. Te, they. Menire, thought. Amaram, a demigod. Translation. Well, yeah. Go back, because 13 has no purport. Read 13 and then the translation for 14, then purport. Cowherd boys opened their eyes and were amazed to find not only had they and the cows been saved from the terrible fire, that they had all been brought back to the Bandira tree. When the cowherd boys saw that they had been saved from the forest fire by the Lord's mystic power, which is manifested by his internal potency, they began to think that Krishna must be a demigod. Report. The cowherd boys of Vrindavan simply loved Krishna as their only friend and exclusive object of devotion. To increase their ecstasy, Krishna displayed to them his mystic potency and saved them from a terrible forest fire. The cowherd boys could never give up their ecstatic, loving friendship with Krishna. Therefore, rather than considering Krishna to be God after they saw his extraordinary power, they thought that perhaps he was a demigod. But since Krishna was their beloved friend, they were on the same level with him, and thus they thought that they too must be demigods. Quite logical, right? Logic. Inference. In this way, Krishna's cowherd friends became overwhelmed with ecstasy. So, if technology works, I'll be able to read to you the commentary on this verse, 14, by Vishwanath and Jiva Goswami. Looks like it's going to work. Okay. Vishwanath writes, text 14. This verse shows that though they had seen Krishna's power, that knowledge could not cover the strength of their sakya prema, love and friendship, as was the case of Arjuna and others. So this internal potency effect, this yoga maya effect, was covering them. They couldn't see by Krishna's arrangement, because and the strength of their love and friendship. Yoga virya means power to attain or achieve extraordinary things. The extraordinary thing was getting saved. This power arose through the instruction of Yogamaya. The verse reads, Yogamaya anubhavita. Seeing the power of Krishna to save them, accomplished through his Yogamaya Shakti, they thought Krishna was a type of deva or amara. Amara means deathless. Demigods are, they live a long time, so they're sometimes referred to that way. Amara. Even that realization was slightly informal, for the boys thought, quote, because Krishna has done things humans cannot do, by inference, he must be a deva, not a human. And because we are his friends, we must also be devas. How could we be friends if we're not similar? Thinking this way, they were overwhelmed with bliss. And Jiva Goswami, his commentary, he refers to a verse from Canto 10, Chapter 12. This is Chapter 19. So in going back to Chapter 12, in this way, it's a translation of a verse. In this way, with an abundance of splendor caused by Krishna, they played with him. Though he is pure consciousness, or happiness, known as Brahman for the Jnanis, is the Supreme Lord for the devotees, with Dasya Bhava, yeah, they're Sakya Bhava. So the Supreme Lord for the devotees with Dasya Bhava, and is an ordinary human child for those covered by material illusion. That's, so he's making reference to that verse to explain this verse. Knowledge of Krishna's power could not be covered up by the cowherd boy's pure friendship with Krishna, which is praised by all. However, some little knowledge of his powers arose at that time. His power was revealed, anubhavitam, by his inconceivable power, Yogamaya. So we're getting some, like, technology here. The technology of Krishna has Yogamaya. Yogamaya is a power of illusion. Maya is illusion. And Yogamaya is his power of illusion. And the power of illusion covers materialistic people a certain way, and Yogamaya covers the intimate devotees in a certain way, but it's the same Yogamaya potency. One causes forgetfulness, the other causes forgetfulness, but with love, in different mellows of love. The dictionary, Vishva Prakash, says that yoga means that which produces the extraordinary. The boys reflected on his powers, which were revealed by Yogamaya. and then thought he was a special devata. What was his power? He rescued them from the forest fire. He had done what was auspicious. Kshemam. Here he's translating kshemam as auspicious. And kshemam also can mean protection. But protection is also auspicious. The boys then considered that because of Krishna, they did not die. Amaram. We will not be separated from Krishna on account of dying if we surrender to him. And I wanted to, it's a very long purport. Jiva Goswami writes for the previous verse, and just like a summary, he references so many different sources, Puranic sources. He didn't have folio and database, and he just had a good memory. And he references these different verses to indicate it's not just here in the Bhagavatam. Many places refer to Bandira tree. So I could read, it's interesting, but it's just summary. Many, many references to a humongous tree. And then he said, I personally went to this place. I've been there many times. I'm very familiar with the place. Here's what is known today. It's still by similar names today. And so it's a real place, referenced in many, many places. And he spends some time indicating its location, which was some distance from where the forest fire took place. It's on the other side of the river Jamuna, his indication is, and says, how can hundreds of thousands of cows cross over the river Jamuna? It was by Krishna's mystic power they crossed the river Jamuna. After spending some time, it's a real place, and here's where it is, and it's on the other side of where they started their cow herding, so how'd they get on the other side? It's by mystic power. So, what's Krishna doing here? Well, the indication given by our acharyas is he wanted to stimulate their ecstatic loving friendship for him. That's why he did it. So they, being in Sakya Prema, in friendship of love with intense friendship for Krishna, they can't see his divinity. And Krishna knows that. Krishna feels that. At the same time, he wanted to amplify or heighten that love and friendship in a particular way. So that was his desire. Yoga Maya, his potency. We kind of use this term commonly, regularly, liberally, as his power, his potency of his pastimes. By Krishna's Yoga Maya potency, he does things. But specifically, he does things in relation to his devotees, that kind of yoga maya, and it stimulates their love for him. So through his yoga maya potency, directed yoga virya. Virya means strength. Yoga virya then became activated or released or Because he has unlimited and inconceivable potency. This is a fundamental conception of Bhagavan. Bhagavan means one who possesses bhagas. Bhagas means transcendental opulences that are not of this world. And how many? Well, there's six primary, but they're unlimited. Bhagavan possesses unlimited and inconceivable potency. So by his icha, now living entities also have, we're tiny, but we also have icha. It's one of the six values taught in Bhagavad Gita, according to the Oxford Project folks. Icha, it's one of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita that we also have free will. We can choose, and that choice capacity is of the soul. It's never taken from the soul. So Icha is there in the Supreme Soul. That's why we have. And by his, he doesn't have to do anything. He doesn't have to say, hey, Yogamaya. He didn't have to do that. Now, he can do that. He did that in the case of transferring Balaram from the womb of Devaki to Rohini and so forth. He can do that, but he doesn't have to do that. He can just have a desire. So he had a desire. What was that? He wanted to stimulate the ecstatic love of his friends. Yogamaya gets the hint because she's intimately connected. And she then unleashed his yoga virya. Dictionary definition is that which produces something extraordinary. Now there's other definitions of yoga. It's linking. But linking with what? Linking with that which is extraordinary, and the source of all extraordinary. So he released his, or Yogamaya released Yogavirya, and the fire came and the fire went away. The fire coming and the fire disappearing was all part of this Yogamaya potency doing extraordinary things. So what's going to happen? How the cowherd boy is going to take it? I mean, they knew that Krishna would do something. When they had the problem, what did they do? Krishna! That's what they did. And sure enough, Krishna, who arranged for the difficulty, took the difficulty. And so they felt, Krishna! But specifically the mention is being made because they saw this like miraculous thing. It's not like they haven't seen yoga virya, the extraordinary power of Krishna before. But at least in this case, so there's, it's just like clouds. Clouds can be really, really, really thick. Clouds can be really, really, really thin and somewhere in between. So in this case, the yoga virya caused the boys to think, wow. He did something extraordinary. That's this final word over here. Shamam. Something extraordinary. Very auspicious. He's not just a human. Now, in Vedic literature, there's much more sense of pious people, at least, even Ravana, he wasn't a pious person. He was the far end of the other extreme. When he saw the power of Hanuman, he was doing this deductive thing also, or inductive, excuse me. He's not just a monkey. But he must be some ploy sent, some manifestation somehow sent by the demigods. But I've conquered all the demigods, so for me it's not a problem. But he destroyed so many generals, and he killed my son. This is after the meeting with Sita. So he had a sense of demigods. So it's not surprising, for us it's surprising, perhaps, that somebody that exhibits some extraordinary power through mystic yoga, but it's a power. Commonly, the mystic yogis, it's described in the scripture, they can do material things. It's just manipulation of laws that they know how to manipulate, that done subtly, and they can make something extraordinary happen that ordinarily doesn't happen. It's not within the ordinary sets of laws. They know how to manipulate laws and do something extraordinary. But it's just subtle laws of nature that they're manipulating by their subtle mystic power. So when somebody sees a mystic do something, what are they going to think? He's not an ordinary person. So they start to conclude whatever they, you know, their speculation says. Some persons say he's just a mystic. I mean, it's exceptional, but it's just a subtle material law. Some people say he's a demigod. Some people say maybe he's a demigod. Some people say maybe he's God. Or some people say he's God, because they can do something, some magic, something extraordinary. Now, certainly, God can do things extraordinary. And part of his doing things extraordinary, like lifting Govardhan Hill, or showing his universal form, is to prevent people in the future from saying, I'm God, okay, show your universal form. This is like, once I heard this recording, or conversation, Prabhupada, when people say, you said we can challenge, can you show me your universal form? And if they can't show the universal form, then I can't accept that you're God. And then, but how do we answer if they say, well, I could show you, but you don't have the eyes to see, you're not qualified? How do we answer that? Prabhupada said, show me the person. I'd like to meet the person who is among your followers who is qualified, who has seen your universal form. And if you don't have someone that's qualified, then how are you God? And if you have someone that's qualified, you want to meet them. It's bluff. You call their bluff. That's Prabhupada. So back to Vrindavan. When the power, extraordinary power of Yogeshwara is manifested, they do things that we're not supposed to do, you could say. They're speculating. Maybe. And if maybe, then maybe we're demigods. Yay, we're demigods. Let's go have lunch. So their real happiness is their loving relation with Krishna, not any of those other things. And they have a way of processing that experience, but the end result was achieved. The end result was their stimulation of their loving friendship with Krishna. Now, he didn't have to do that or do it in that way, but he did for his own purposes. One last thing. It's noteworthy that this one pastime is performed twice. There's not just one forest fire that Krishna eliminates, but two forest fires that Krishna eliminates. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes the significance of why two. And he indicates that the dissension is like a forest fire. And Krishna protects his devotee from the forest fire of dissension. Because dissension is so prominent, he does it twice. We were discussing this yesterday. The Bhaktivinoda Thakur's explanation of Krishna's killing of demons, because there was some speculation by the elders in Vrindavan, maybe this was a buddy of one of the demons that Krishna killed that came to take retaliation and came in the form of a forest fire or something. But when there is dissension and it's like a fire, and fire is very dangerous, as we know. Three things, one of Prabhupada's instructions. Three things should be dealt with immediately. When there's fire, you don't, it's a small fire. You extinguish the fire, because a small fire can become more than small fire quickly. Fire, disease, and debt. So those are three things that require prompt attention. So when there's dissension, is in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's description, it happens. He described at the beginning of this whole explanation, it's just the force of time. In the beginning, there's unity, and then there's diversity, and then with diversity comes groupism, and with groupism comes dissension. We're better, this is the right way, or et cetera, et cetera. Then there's dissension. Without recognizing the essence from which the diversity has come. It's just the material energy doing its thing. And when the material energy is doing its thing in this way, then hearing this, Krishna's pastime of withdrawing the forest fire has potency for the devotee who hears Krishna's pastime of withdrawing the forest fire in helping the devotee become free from the tendency to become involved in dissension. It's of this world, again, Bhaktivinoda, it's going to happen. It does happen. It will continue to happen. It has always been happening because there's differences of opinion. Just like Bhaktisiddhanta's statement, like really heavy when people hear it, there's no love in this material world. But wait a minute. I love my wife, I love my husband, I love my family, I love my dog, I love my friend, I love my money. I have love. How can you say that? No love. So his point is that there's differences of what's important to one another without Krishna at the center. Because there's always going to be differences. So what's the unity? So the unity is the unity of love. And love is, there's one thing, Krishna. And then that's what love is. And so that love is otherworldly. And when you have otherworldly love, then it makes the differences manifest in this world not a problem. Not a cause of dissension. One can respect differences without dissension, centered on, sheltered in love. Now, in the spiritual world, is there dissension? Left-wing, right-wing gopis, for example, etc., etc. But, you know, there's one. That the resolution of that is Krishna's pleasure. So it's the appearance of dissension, not like the dissension of this world. it's a really wonderful subject matter, and it's something that's important for us to understand how to deal with differences so it doesn't end up in a conflagration. Fratricidal war, or a milder version. Okay, so I think I'll end with that. See if there's some discussion or comments. Yeah.
Maharaj, two questions. My first question is, you mentioned that Krishna had a desire in his heart to experience loving relationship with his devotees. You were mentioning this point. And I was just wondering if scripturally there is any indication that Krishna has a desire for us to also come back to Godhead. We hear Prabhupada mentions it in his purports in many places, but I was just wondering scripturally if there is such an
indication. Well, I didn't.
Indication.
I don't recall having said what you said I said. Not that he doesn't have a desire. He has unlimited desire. So, but does he desire us to go back to Godhead? That's your question?
Yes, just like he has a desire to have loving relationship with his devotees in Vrindavan.
Well, sure. But you know, you say the negative, he doesn't desire us to suffer. And what's the root of that suffering? Forgetting our relationship with him. He desires our happiness. That's his happiness. As the devotee desires the happiness of the Supreme Lord. So our happiness is to be in our relationship with him. And back to Godhead isn't just like a geographic destination. It's a consciousness. Back to Godhead consciousness. In other words, one can be anywhere and being back to Godhead consciousness. Krishna wants that loving recipient. It's they're not disconnected, those two desires.
Hang on.
You've got two questions.
And my second question was, you ended the class by speaking about the significance of the forest fire, how it represents dissension, and Krishna swallowing the fire. From what I heard, you were saying to remove that tendency within our own hearts to fall into dissension or disagreement over opinions. And I was just reflecting how in my own personal life, when I have a disagreement with a devotee over something related to a service, it's very hard to be conscious at the same time that ultimately we want that pleasure of Krishna principle. It sometimes becomes this thing of, well, my intelligence seems to indicate that this is the best way to do it, you know? So how can we start to introduce this idea that, okay, my intelligence is feeling like this, your intelligence is feeling like this, but ultimately we both want to please Krishna. So how do we start moving in that direction from where I'm at?
Wanting to move in that direction is how you start. That's an icha. That's a free will. That's a free will option. And you exercise it. You exercise your icha muscle. Krishna is to be pleased. So when that is up here, Krishna is to be pleased. Then you align everything to that. And then the intelligence starts to work. Okay, how to get there? No, the material is, you know, good and bad, right and wrong, happy, sad, black and white, or, you know, maybe I'll be liberal and say gray, but, you know, it's forgetful of Krishna's happiness. The intention is then mixed and thus out of focus. So just refocus. How to is the desire. That's how it begins. Recognition. Here I am in this space. So we just had this little exercise yesterday at the IIT program. At the last thing that we did was think of then devotees in pairs were asked to share. Think of a situation where there was a misunderstanding between you and another, and it hurt. Think of that situation, think of the person, think of the feeling connected with the person in the situation. Then step back and think of within that, not the behavior or the circumstance that came along with the behavior, but that's the spirit soul. And how do you regard the situation and the person, and what are your feelings? So now keep going, and you know, the opportunity, here's an opportunity for me, and you know, let's see if the other person sees it as an opportunity also. But at least for me, my wish is to stay in that consciousness that Krishna is to be pleased in the situation. I don't have, my orientation is not exactly like that. So I'm feeling a little uncomfortable to get over to that place instead of, you know, I'm right and they're wrong. Or I win, they lose. Or we'll compromise. Or I'll yield and they win. I'll, you know, be happy being the compromiser. So instead of those, that's transactional, it transformational option. I want to please Krishna. Whatever the outcome is. Hey, that's novel. We're not used to that. But how does it start was your question. And then it starts with the desire. And that's who we really are. We're meant for Krishna's pleasure. That's who we are. Servants meant for his pleasure. Okay. It's right next to you because he's right next to you. Then we're over here.
Maharaj, I'm sorry if I missed, if you explained why there are why the same pastime happens twice?
Because it's important. Because there is such a tendency amongst loving devotees, just like his question, there's a tendency to, you know, I want to please devotees. I want to please Krishna. I want to please Krishna. And there's a tendency for dissension amongst those who feel I want to please Krishna. And then it's fantastic. You want to please Krishna. That's fantastic. And recognize that others also want to please Krishna. And don't get into the dissension mode. Get into the pleasing Krishna mode. It's really important. And we're social beings. And so that's the contamination of this material world. Now, it's a pastime where there isn't that contamination. But he's showing and exhibiting potencies that can remove the material contamination from us. It's really important. That's why it's twice. That's my understanding anyway. It's probably multiple others. You ready? Put your hand up. You're passing. Okay. You have a comment. Whatever you like. Yes or no, or maybe.
Oh, I'm fine.
I'm fine, okay. Anyone else? Yes.
Guru Maharaj, a point that you brought up, that when there is dissension between devotees,
Tension between devotees, okay.
Yeah. The operative principle is that we want to please Krishna.
Yes.
But within that wanting to please Krishna, there could be like many practical elements.
Sure.
So within that, could you give me?
Excuse me. This is called relationship. We're different. We want to please Krishna. Let's have a relationship. Now there's many elements. That's fantastic. It'd be boring if it wasn't, you know, wasn't many elements. It's there's lots of diversity in relationships. Keep going.
So one of the elements that I have identified for myself is to always respect, show respect and appreciation for devotees. Could you tell me, like, if there is, like...
Could I do what?
Could you, like, give me more indications?
More situations?
No, like within those, within that element of wanting to please Krishna, to give appreciation to devotees is one of the things that I identified for myself. Are there, like, could you give me like two or three more elements within that umbrella of wanting to please
there's
Krishna?
There's some key words that...
You go like this and I can't hear what you're saying.
Could somebody help? If you're in front.
She has identified for herself that one of the ways of pleasing Krishna is to show respect or and express appreciation for devotees. Could you kindly give her two or more such things?
Two or more?
Things that she could say.
Things that she can say.
Elements. She used the word elements that will fit within the category of pleasing Krishna in relation to devotees.
So, let me try. I feel it's important to show respect and appreciation to devotees. Can you help me with some of examples of expressions to show respect and appreciation for devotees in such a way that Krishna is pleased? That's your question? That's it?
I thought... So, one element is showing respect to devotees. Are there other elements that fits under the category of pleasing Krishna?
Of course. You know, think of all the mode of goodness things, and that's pleasing to Krishna. You know, not just because you're in a woman's body, but Krishna speaks of nice qualities, certain nice qualities of women. I am this opulence of the Absolute. Just take anyone from that list. That's pleasing to Krishna. So gratitude. Pleasing to Krishna. Acceptance. Wishing to be in service to. Forget where I recently came across this. Yeah. It's in the Dhruva Maharaj description where when Dhruva gets angry that his stepbrother has been killed and he goes on this rampage. Swami Bhuvamanu comes, his grandfather. Stop. He stops. He gives reasons, but, you know, he stops. Kuvera comes, hearing that he stopped. And he doesn't say, I forgive you. He just says, you're sinless. And says many other things. So, Dhruva, in that section, because of Dhruva's pure devotion, he knew how culturally to express himself. And the commentary says, when one becomes Krishna conscious, then the culture of how to convey oneself and offer the proper words in the proper way at the proper time, the basis and support of that is pure Krishna consciousness. So now, no harm in looking at the behavior inventory and saying, here's some possible ways, or here's some values that can help exhibit those behaviors. But what's the basis and support of it is our connection with Krishna. So, I'm just, because I've been absorbed in the Dhruva Leela, it's very instructive in many, many, many ways. And more important, let's just say like this, just like improving japa, more important than this technique or that technique is the desire to improve japa. And then you can take this technique or that tool or something and it will help you improve. But the tools are to help you improve japa, but the operative principle is, so you've got the right principle. Now, then what's left is not just read Bhagavad Gita in such a manner that Krishna is speaking to you how to get to that place of consciousness, that everything that you do is for his pleasure. And read the Bhagavatam in that way. And that's the best, what's pleasing to Krishna, thing you can do. Because it takes care of everything. And no harm, values, and behaviors. I'm going to end there. Thank you very much. Prabhupada ki.